Well, I'm going to speak for yourself from the crib, presented by Hyundai, Jason Whitlock, Marcellus Wiley, on a Friday, and the weekend is here. Can't wait to get out in these streets and do nothing. All right, we have a fantastic show planned for you today. Takeo Spikes, former Pro Bowl linebacker, is going to join us in the next segment. We're going to get into Taysom Hill and him being a bigger Lamar Jackson, whether that statement has anything to do with sanity. Also, former PGA Tour golfer Steve Elkington is going to join us, and we're going to talk about the Tiger, Phil, Tom Brady, Peyton Manning golf matchup that's going down this weekend. I'm excited for that. But we're going to start in the National Football League, where we love to start. We're going to roll out to Denver and bring in our main man, Mark Schlereth, from his crib in Denver. And we're going to talk about Dak Prescott and the Dallas Cowboys. Dak has been involved in the news all week, starting with a report from NBC Sports' Chris Sims that Dak wants more than $45 million a year in the final year of his contract, and reports that Dak turned down a $175 million contract. Dak's agent, Todd France, has refuted that. I tend not to believe it. Other NFL reporters have refuted that. Well, now it looks like NBC Sports has another response, perhaps coming out of the Todd France CAA camp. Pro Football Talk's Mike Florio wrote an article today stating that Dak Prescott has the most contract leverage in the history of the NFL for any quarterback. Florio pointing to Dak's the franchise tag and how much money Dak could get this year and the following year, and then in 2022 if they franchise him. And Florio suggests that those numbers mean Dak has the most leverage in the history of the NFL in terms of contract. Marcellus, this isn't tracking for me. Help me understand it. Do you agree that Dak Prescott has the most leverage we've ever seen?
No, I don't agree with it. All I agree is that Dak may get the highest contract in NFL history. He may get the most compensation, but that does not mean he has the most leverage ever. If he had the most leverage ever, he would already have what he wanted. It would be foolproof and concrete in terms of what Dak wants and what the Cowboys must cave and give to him. And that's not the reality. This is why it's not foolproof. Dak goes out there next year and wet the bed. What's going to happen to this contract situation? What's going to happen to the most leverage ever if Dak goes out there and that's a reality, or injury? So those two things right there, poor performance or injury, can undermine all of what we're anticipating Dak to get compensated. So when you have the most leverage ever, you dictate terms. John Elway comes to mind. Eli Manning comes to mind, or my San Diego Chargers. That's leverage. I don't know if it's even the most leverage ever, but certainly it's more than what Dak is showing right now, because Dak can't even get his deal done with quote-unquote the most leverage. So I disagree with it.
Yeah, see, I'll go on the opposite side of that. I agree with it. He's got the most leverage ever simply because of the franchise tag that's going on right now. He's going to make $31 million. But, you know, when you start looking at Deshaun Watson, he's still got to play out his rookie deal. He's got that fifth-year option as a first-rounder. Same thing with Patrick Mahomes. So, like, they don't have as much leverage as Dak has right now. Now, it doesn't mean that he'll have the most leverage forever, because when those guys are up and they're ready to sign a deal, they're going to usurp whatever deal Dak Prescott gets. But right now, he's got more leverage than I think anybody has ever had, from the standpoint of, are you willing, as the Dallas Cowboys, to say, you know what, we're going to rescind our offer on the franchise tag, and we're going to move to Andy Dalton. See you around, Dak, because Dak will get scooped up in a heartbeat. So do I think he's got great leverage? Absolutely, he's got great leverage right now. I mean, it doesn't mean that he's earned it or that he deserves it or any of that. It's just the way it is. He's got the great leverage. And one thing you can't be afraid to do as a franchise, you can't be afraid to set the market, because guess what happens? 2 years from now, it'll look like a bargain.
Mark, I completely disagree with you for the two names that you referenced. One, you would have to be Patrick Mahomes to me to have the most leverage. You'd have to be coming off a Super Bowl, have an MVP trophy, and be seen as the potential greatest quarterback talent-wise we've seen since John Elway. that gives you leverage. And then the other thing that I think undermines Dak leverage is the other name you mentioned, Andy Dalton. And so what we're witnessing, in my view, is a behind-the-scenes war between the Cowboys and Dak's agent, Todd France, and it's a leverage war of leaks. The Cowboys got, in my view, got Chris Sims to argue that Dak turned down the richest contract ever. That put Dak in an uncomfortable conversation, a negative conversation about Dak being greedy. They then, Todd France's camp, using Mike Florio again, NBC Sports again, and, well, Dak's got the greatest leverage ever, and they want to put that conversation out into the universe. The reality is Dak's losing this negotiation. There are people in Dallas, Cowboys fans, and I would suspect, assume, Cowboys players that are going to be like, wow, we love Dak, but $40 million a pop, $35 million a pop, as much money as Russell Wilson a pop, I just don't think Cowboys players are going to sign off on that. And Dak right now is lucky that we're in a pandemic and things are shut down. Because once Andy Dalton gets in practice with these guys and Dak is holding out, what they're going to find out, there's not much difference between Andy Dalton and Dak Prescott. Dak runs a little bit better than Andy Dalton. That's it. In terms of arm, accuracy, playing from the pocket, I don't think Dak's any better than Andy Dalton. Those receivers are going to find that out, and Dak's leverage is going to sink even further. Sounds like I'm taking an incredible shot at Dak, but I actually think Andy Dalton's a pretty decent quarterback. Same thing I think about Dak Prescott at this point. They're about on the same path. I think Dak's been surrounded by more talent, but I just don't see him having a great deal of leverage because he hasn't shown the kind of talent that, you know, the great quarterbacks in the NFL have shown. And most NFL teams don't have an experienced starter, a guy that's played in playoff games like Andy Dalton. The Cowboys can move on from Dak Prescott. And to me, they seem to be setting the table that they might move on from Dak Prescott.
Yeah, I'm with you there, Jason. Just talking about leverage, it shouldn't be measured solely by compensation, if you think about it. Because Dak's going to get propped up by numbers just because of the value of others. Or if you want to look at a situation like a Jimmy G, look at Dak using Jimmy G's calculator of 2 years ago, he was the highest paid at $27 million. So Dak already gets inflated because he had more than seven starts. And Jimmy G only had seven starts and became the highest paid player in the NFL just 2 years ago. So that pumps Dak up. And then you look at the market right now and you look at situations, you say, well, Dak can play the franchise tag game. And that props him up if Dak stays who he is. But here's the problem that undermines this best leverage ever. Jason pointed it out. Andy Dalton. Andy Dalton's there on a $3 million contract. You trying to tell me that Dak Prescott is 10 times better than Andy Dalton? And that would just be at $30 million. So there's nowhere where you can look at that logic and start to say, you know what, Dak is worth all this money. That's why he doesn't have the leverage. He has the value because of Jimmy G, because of Carson Wentz, but he doesn't have the leverage. That's why the deal hasn't gotten done yet. They have not finished this deal because that leverage is not as great as they're advertising.
All right, so here's where I would point of order you, Jason. A.J. Green, Marvin Jones, Mohamed Sanu, Tyler Eifert, I think that's a pretty decent amount of talent. What at one point when Andy Dalton first got to Cincinnati, I'd say they were as talented as any football team in the National Football League, but they were the Cincinnati Bengals.
Ohio. So,
yeah, that's an issue. So, and then as far as talent is concerned, if the reports are right, and I have to assume the reports are, you know, the reports are the reports, you know, from the $35 million a year, if you're already offering that, then that would just prove my point that he has got a ton of leverage. If the Cowboys are already saying, hey, okay, $35 million a year, and he's saying, I'll accept that, except I want $45 in my last year, it seems to me that he's already got a ton of leverage, and they don't buy Andy Dalton as anything more than, you know, QB number two as a solid backup in case something happens, in case somebody gets hurt. So, I mean, I think they've got a ton of – hey, listen, he has the leverage right now. When it's, you know, when it's Patrick Mahomes' turn, then there's no question he's going to be the highest paid guy. The guy's a unicorn. I get that. But right now, we're just talking pure leverage. Right now, as we sit in May, I think he's got as much as anybody has ever had.
I think that Jerry Jones is chuckling, thinking about Dak having the ultimate leverage, because that's crazy. I want to ask a couple of things, and I only want you to answer one of them. But listen, Andy Dalton took the Bengals to 5 straight playoff appearances. Would Dak Prescott have done that in the same situation? I don't think so. Don't want you to answer that. I'm going to give you the other reason why I don't think Dak has, and this is why I want you and Marcellus to respond to this. Why I don't think Dak has the ultimate leverage. It's the wrong offseason for a quarterback of Dak's ability and Dak's resume to say he has ultimate leverage because, one, they have Andy Dalton. But there's a former MVP sitting out there posting pictures every day on social media that he is healthy and looking for a team to play for. Cam Newton. And so if you, Jerry Jones, the maverick that he is, Marcellus, I'll start with you and then Mark, you answer. Cam Newton and Andy Dalton competing for that Dallas Cowboys job versus paying Dak Prescott $35 million a year. Cam Newton, Andy Dalton, that combination this year, or paying Dak all that money, which would you rather have, Marcellus?
Man, this wasn't on the script. Don't do that to me. You know what I would have. Give me those two guys over the one Dak Prescott. Man, damn, you made me look bad up here. Here's the thing, though, Jason, that another thing poking a hole in the leverage of Dak Prescott is the fact that in 2021, let's be real, the response to the coronavirus pandemic is going to affect the salary cap next year. Who wants to be a free agent in 2021 when you realize you may have less salary cap space to work with as a team? And the revenues were decreased because of the empty stadiums potentially of this year. So if I'm Jerry Jones, I'm like, okay, Dak, we may franchise you, but don't think that this is going to play franchise, or we're going to give you this huge deal, because we could let you test the market next year. And good luck to any quarterback who's trying to make top dollar that doesn't stay with their team and try to go as a free agent somewhere else and get that money. So I would take the combo package of obviously the former MVP and Andy Dalton, but also be careful of the next offseason because it's going to be dire out there.
All right. Well, here's where you're both wrong. I'd take Dak, and here's where you're both wrong, and I'm going to end the leverage conversation right here. Is Dak Prescott as good as Russell Wilson? And the answer is no. Cowboys already offering Russell Wilson's contract, yearly average contract? The answer is yes. He's got leverage and lots of it.
Reports are they've offered him that much money. That's reports. We don't know that factually. And I'll say this. If they're crazy for offering that kind of money, if so. And I'm just sorry. I'd rather have Cam and Andy Dalton than Dak Prescott overpaid. All right, Taquio Spikes is just around the corner. We'll continue our conversation about the NFL. Yeah. Taquio Spikes from his crib. Speak for yourself from the crib, presented by Hyundai. More after this.
Talking about ED isn't easy. Usually, we just brush it off or blame ourselves, saying things like, I lost my mojo. Or we avoid it altogether with excuses like, I had a long day at work. Or, sorry, honey, I'm just not feeling it. But with Roman, it is easy to talk about it with a real doctor who can prescribe real medication. It's simple, safe, and totally discreet. With Roman, you can get a free online evaluation and ongoing care for ED, all from the comfort and privacy of your home. The doctor will work with you to find the best treatment plan. If medication is appropriate, Roman will ship it to you with free 2-day shipping. The whole process is straightforward, simple, and discreet. ED used to be tough to tackle, but now there's Roman. Complete an online visit today to connect with a doctor and take care of it. Just go to GetRoman.com/speak to get a free online visit and free 2-day shipping. That's GetRoman.com/speak for a free visit to get started. GetRoman.com/speak.
Welcome back to Speak for Yourself from the crib. Jason Whitlock, Marcellus Wiley, Speak for Yourself, presented by Hyundai. Time now to pull up at Taquio Spikes' crib in Atlanta. And this is a sweet crib, one of the best studios we've seen from their crib. Taquio, thank you for joining us. Let's get right to it. Antonio Brown, back in the news a little bit with reports that Russell Wilson would love to add AB to the Seattle Seahawks. Wilson always looking for experienced, explosive, big play players to add to his offense. The deal actually kind of makes a little sense. Pete Carroll, one of the most experienced coaches in the NFL, fifth longest tenured. Obviously, you know, coached with the Jets before and USC. A lot of coaching experience. A lot of experience dealing with big personalities, dealing with the Legion of Boom and Richard Sherman. Marcellus, get us rolling here. Do you think AB to Seattle, good idea?
I think it's a good idea. It's worth the roll of the dice. If it implodes, if AB implodes, hey, so be it. I think this locker room could deal with this. You talk about Pete Carroll and his latitude of dealing with different types of personalities. Marshawn Lynch in the same locker room with Richard Sherman, the Legion of Boom. Of course, if you went through that experience, you can handle AB no matter what comes from it. And think about it. This is a different dynamic in terms of leadership. It's not Russell Wilson who comes to the Legion of Boom through draft selection. It's now Russell Wilson's team, and you just add AB. So if Russell survived that crash course of personalities, he could deal with AB. And if Russell desires it in a division that is going to look really strong next year, you might as well add some more arsenal to the wide receiver core.
Celis, I disagree with you on that, Big Bro, and this is the reason why. The best dependability is accountability. And when you look at the simple fact of AB, he has the opportunity to go to Seattle. Yeah, Pete Carroll, he's done a lot of things as far as being able to deal with big personalities. But when we talk about the accountability, are you disciplined enough to continue to do what you're supposed to be doing week in and week out? And that's one of the things that AB could not do over the previous 2 years, even going back with the New England Patriots. We know how Bill Belichick and how tough and how stern that he is on his system. And so when I look at this, the Seattle Seahawks, the reason why I don't like it is they're not one player away. I think they have a lot of great players on their football team, and I think they can go out and fill this void with another wide receiver. And one guy who I've seen that's on the board, he's still a free agent, is Taylor Gabriel, the receiver that came out that's played with Chicago last year, started his career off with the Atlanta Falcons. And so for me, when I look at what are they lacking, they are lacking somebody who can go underneath, somebody who can catch a pass for 5-10 yards and have the ability to be able to take it to the house. Taylor Gabriel is that guy who I really like.
Taquio, you make a great point and said a lot of things that I agree with. The only thing that has softened my opinion or changed my opinion, I want you to respond to this, is AB has sat out of football for an entire year. He has likely been humbled to some degree. So why wouldn't it be worth taking the chance? You know his talent is enormous. He's been humbled. You don't think he's been changed or humbled enough that working with a Russell Wilson and a Pete Carroll, knowing he can get run if he screws up, you don't think that AB would be more dependable?
I mean, you work with Tom Brady and Bill Belichick. So if that's not enough incentive for you to be the player and the person who you need to be, I don't know if Pete Carroll or Russell Wilson would be able to do that. You know, just simply saying, that's the way I feel strongly about that. And I know this young man can provide so much for this football team. I personally think the Seattle Seahawks has a great opportunity next year coming up into this season to be able to contend for that NFC West title, especially if they had AB. But just with the uncertainty of what he's done in the previous 2 years, I'm not willing to bank on that.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. You look at a situation where in New England and it doesn't work out. So everywhere else, you're like, you're not going to be properly motivated to be disciplined if you didn't show that same discipline in New England. But Jason has a great point. It's about the humility, and that comes from within. That's when all of a sudden that ego's fire finally flames out, and you realize I have burned up all my opportunities. So now I can go to a lesser situation but give more of myself. We've all been through those situations before where you messed up the best thing on paper, but then something else comes your way because you're different. All of a sudden, you step up to the plate, even if it's deemed a lesser situation.
Takeo, I just want to explain to you, Marcellus is actually talking about his wife. She had a great opportunity with another man, had to settle for Marcellus, and has made the best of that situation. All right, let's move on to Taysom Hill, who people are hyping up as if he's the next Lamar Jackson. First, we heard it from special teams coach, Saints special teams coach, Mike Westhoff, comparing Taysom Hill to Lamar Jackson. Now, our main man over here at Fox Sports, Jay Glazer, has called Taysom Hill a bigger Lamar Jackson. This strikes me as insanity and potentially hurtful for Taysom Hill. Takeo, do these comparisons to Lamar actually hurt Taysom Hill?
Whitlock, I got to be honest with you. I tussled over this one right here, but do they hurt him? No. This is the reason why. All of the attention is now going to be on Hill. And with knowing that, he doesn't have to go out and play and produce just because Drew Brees is in the driver's seat. So I think what it actually does, it brings greater attention, like what we're doing right here, right now, talking about it. But if you're trying to compare, I just think it's kind of flagrant to even compare Lamar Jackson. The reason why, because when you look at the body of work, and you even go back to college, his best college season doesn't even compare to Lamar Jackson. And if you look at what they've been able to do in the pros, like, it's no comparison. Yeah, I do see similarities, but this is the thing that I want to state. The thing that makes Hill such a big threat, I remember playing on the defensive side, and when you don't see quarterbacks who play all the time, but you know they have ability, when they come into the game, now you have to go back in your mind, your recollection, throughout the practice week, and let's go back to that segment of block of plays that we had to prepare for. And it's a lot of guys can't recall like that. When you're fatigued makes cowards out of everybody. So I think that's the reason why when you see Hill be able to come in the game and be able to make plays, it's simply because defensive coaches, defensive players don't have a big enough body of work to be able to say, you know what? I know in short yardage situations, I can hang my hat on this because you've done it out of the 15 times that I charted. And that's the reason why I think Jay Glazer can get away with this comment, but there's no comparison. Lamar Jackson, hands down, one of the best ever.
I'm with you, Takeo, and I'm going to take the gloves off. This is insulting to Lamar Jackson more so than it's hurtful to Taysom Hill. He's thrown 15 passes in his career, and he's getting compared to an NFL MVP. Like, literally, he's going to be 30 years old next year, and he's the third-string quarterback on the team. Third, not one, not two, third-string, and he's getting compared to the best player in football last year. Who in the hell think, I don't care how big you are, I don't care how fast you are, translate that to football and production before we start making these type of comparisons. This is undermining to anything that Lamar Jackson has done. And being real, anybody else between being Lamar Jackson and Taysom Hill, which is a lot of the NFL right now, because we have not seen him on the field consistently. I've been a backup. I've been a glorified backup. I come in for 10 plays. I get one sack. Ooh, he the next Bruce Smith. Let's put him out there for the whole game. I ain't getting four sacks. I ain't getting five sacks every game. So be careful of this spot duty that looks amazing, because if you line them up first and 10 on the 25-yard line and say, let's go for four quarters, you're going to see something different.
Yeah, I actually think this hurts Taysom Hill because I think it puts a bullseye on his back. And I think NFL defensive players around the league, there's a lot of respect for Lamar Jackson. You start comparing a guy that's got a dozen passes in his career, spot duty, 30 years old. 30 years old. He's older, 5-6 years older than Lamar Jackson, and we're saying he's a bigger Lamar Jackson. The only thing I could analogize this to on a serious note is, like, there would be guys that would come in and get a nice little dunk off in the NBA, do a nice little crossover drill. Oh, Harold Miner, he's the next Jordan. This guy's the next Jordan. Mm. This guy's the next Jordan.
Yeah.
No, they're not. No. They just had a little flash of a moment. On a joking note, we're going to have Jay Glazer on the show next week, and we're going to have him talk about my weight loss because I've lost about 30, 40 pounds, and I think he's going to say I'm a bigger Denzel Washington. So we'll try that. All right, Jim Kelly says that the Buffalo Bills have no excuse not to win the AFC East. Everybody's kind of on this deal that the Buffalo Bills are the hot pick. Tom Brady's left for the NFC South in Tampa Bay. That means the New England Patriots are going to take a step back and the Buffalo Bills or somebody's going to step up. Takeo, you made your name in Buffalo. You agree with Jim Kelly here?
No, I somewhat agree with Jim Kelly. I still do think that the NFC East runs through the New England Patriots just simply because, of course, you had Tom Brady, 6 Super Bowls. But when you look at how did he do it, he did it with Bill Belichick and that consistent staff that they've been able to implement. We talked about discipline earlier. But also, the reason why I feel like the Buffalo Bills will really have a chance to take this division, you look at what's surrounding around that team overall, wide receiver position, Stephon Diggs, John Brown. You got Duke Williams, who came on and made a lot of big plays last year. Offensively, they finished 24th in the league. Not great, but better from the year before. Then you look at defensively, they finished 3rd in the league. And so when you look at the DNA of this football team, it's exactly what Sean McDermott wants. I want a top 5 defensive football team who's going to turn the football over. We want to play great run the rock game on the offensive side, from the offensive side, and it boils down to Josh Allen. So it's not so much about what the Patriots are doing. It's so much about Josh Allen knowing that last year, from his first year, he had a career high in completion percentage, a career high in yards, and also threw less interceptions. That's the reason why the Buffalo Bills will win the AFC East.
Man, I'm about to upset my Bills Mafia, but I disagree with Jim Kelly right here. Look, this has never been a talent-based conversation winning the AFC East. New England has not been the most talented team, but they have dominance in that division because they respect their opponents and they respect the process. I think that the Buffalo Bills right now are making a fatal mistake if they're trying to build off of what they did last year. I remind you that the New England Patriots way is to not go out there and defend as champions or repeat as champions. It's to always go back to square one, something that Nick Saban talks about all the time. And what's behind sophomore slump? That whole dynamic of, I did it once this well, this good, next time I'm going to do it even better. It's because you don't go back to square one. Please, Buffalo Bills, don't think because you improved this offseason and New England has it, that they're not going to come with the chemistry, with the focus, discipline, dedication, desire, all those other intangibles that has led to their success in the first place. So I think they're making a mistake if they're thinking they're going to be better than next year because they have a better roster. We've seen too many teams take a step backwards because of talent.
Takeo, you said the name that makes me suspicious of the Buffalo Bills, and it's Josh Allen. I don't particularly like quarterbacks that are 6'5" or taller. You know, 6'4.5", 6'5" is my cutoff. Tall guys, even guys that are athletic like this, I just don't like. And again, you mentioned the improvement in his accuracy completion percentage, but not enough for me. I don't see, and I know he's got more experience and he had a year starting under his belt. I just don't see him being any better than Jared Stidham. And then I see, and I like Sean McDermott, but, you know, he's no Bill Belichick. And so and the Patriots last year had the number one defense in football. Mm. And so I think they have a better head coach. I think they have a better defense in New England. And I think the quarterbacks, to me, are equal at this point. But please, help me understand. You guys are both great former defensive players. I just don't. Josh Allen just doesn't scare me. He's, to me, if I'm a defensive player, he's a big, tall guy. A lot of nice places to hit him, and he's just not elusive enough that he scares me in that way. Takeo, help me sell me on Josh Allen. Why I should believe in him?
I just think you can't compare him to. First of all, I'm not going to put him in the conversation as a Russell Wilson, not even as a Dak Prescott. Both who I think are top five quarterbacks, Aaron Rodgers as well. He's not that type of player, and that's not what they're asking him to do. When you just look at it from a statistical, good, I couldn't even get that word out. When you look at it from that, from a completion percentage, yeah, he moved up from last year also in yards. Now, the thing what was disappointing, and I know it was disappointing to all of the fans in Buffalo, when they were in that playoff game last Houston, opportunity to beat them. And they should have beat them. But the reason why they didn't is because of Josh Allen's play late crunch time on the third and fourth down play. He panicked. And the reason why I'm going to jump on his bandwagon for this year, at least for the first six games, is after that game when they lost, he came into that press conference. He did not have to wait for somebody to ask him a question. He put it all on his shoulders, and he admitted. He was like, you know what? I panicked. I have to do better in order for us to have an opportunity to win. And from a quarterback coming up on that stage, the biggest game of his life, first playoff game, and he came out and he said that, how can you not go with it?
Yeah, for me, man, I could take you inside what we would say candidly about Josh Allen, but first let's just stand on the field and just look. The dude can throw an end zone to end zone. And as our defensive coordinator would have said, frankly, don't let the paint job fool you. This dude can move. Like, 17 rushing touchdowns in his first 2 years. If you watch Josh Allen, outside of Lamar Jackson right now, the quarterback position, I'm really trying to think, who runs the football better than Josh Allen? So a true dual threat who can handle the conditions of Buffalo, which is a part of this conversation as well. This is a guy who's going to learn from his issues before. Humble spirit, a worker in the right situation, has even more assets. I'm a believer in Josh Allen. It's good to see his ascension. He's growing as a passer. And trust me, if the play breaks down, only Lamar Jackson is probably going to take more advantage of it than Josh Allen.
Takeo, thank you for joining us. Great job. We got to keep it moving. Steve Elkington, former PGA Tour pro, 10-time winner, won a PGA championship. He's going to join us next. We're going to talk about this big charity golf matchup. Tiger Woods, Phil Mickelson, Tom Brady, Peyton Manning. Speak for yourself from the Career, presented by Hyundai. More after this.
That's my dog.
Welcome back to Speak for Yourself from the Career, presented by Hyundai. Jason Whitlock, Marcellus Wiley. Time for us to roll down to Houston, Texas, and be joined by former PGA Tour golfer Steve Elkington, 10-time winner on the PGA Tour, 1995 PGA Championship. Steve, this weekend we have the match champions for charity, Tiger Woods and Peyton Manning versus Phil Mickelson and Tom Brady. Do you know anything about Brady and Manning's golf game? Who's better between those two?
I've seen them both play. I haven't played with either one of them. But this is going to be tough sledding for these two guys. It's kind of like me running out on the field with the big fella over here. This is the real deal. And the format that they've chosen for this event is going to get very interesting come the back nine on Sunday.
They're hyping up the trash talk between these guys. Do you have any idea who's going to be the best trash talker? I guess we're going to hear a lot of the conversation between these guys. Who do you think wins that war?
I think Mickelson will have some ammunition packed. I think he'll be ready. I got to think that Brady and Peyton are going to be a little bit nervous about this match. Tiger's not really a trash talker, although he's a counterpuncher. I mean, if you say something to him, he's going to sting back. you know, I think this Tiger and Peyton, I think, have a very good chance of dominating this match.
Now, Steve, first of all, you made me the man in my house. My father's going to be so excited. My first sport ever wasn't football. It actually was golf, 6 years old at the public course. So my dad's still an avid golfer to this day. He's going to be proud of this moment. So let me fan man for a second and ask you, what is it like to be out there and play against Phil Mickelson and Tiger Woods?
I've been going against those two guys for 25 years, you know. It's not real easy playing those two. I got a story about Tiger Woods. In 1997, of course, we know that Tiger's going to be coming back trying to win the Masters again this year. He won last year. But in 1997, when he was a young guy, I was kind of a hot player in the beginning of the year. I'd won at Doral, and then I won the Players' Championship. And when I got to Augusta, I was probably the leading money winner. And, of course, we all know what happened that Sunday when Tiger won the tournament by 12 shots. But on Sunday, I was off early, and I finished my round, and I was in the locker room washing my hands, and I heard the toilet flush. And this was about 2:30 on a Sunday, and out comes Tiger in his red shirt, getting ready to go to the most nervous tee shot ever, which is a 3 o'clock tee time on Sunday afternoon at Augusta. And he came around and he was washing his hands, and I was trying not to make any eye contact with him because, you know, you don't want to talk to somebody that's getting ready to go under that much pressure. And finally, I kind of looked in the mirror and he looked my way. And have you ever seen someone and you look him in the eyes and you just know that there's something really deep and mysterious? I haven't been able to articulate that look of his for the last 30 years or how long it's been. But that guy was possessed. And I've seen that look many times, but I got to see it for the first time in 1997. And when that guy latches onto you, mate, you better watch out.
I love it. I love it. How do you expect PGA's return in June to play out?
Well, there's been a lot of speculation about this. I've been playing golf recently here in town with a bunch of tour players, and they're all ready to go. They want to go and play. Now, there's a lot of rich guys on the PGA Tour, as you know. However, there's a lot of guys that are just not making all that much money, and they want it. The only way we get a check is that we have to win a paycheck. So I've been speaking to a lot of guys. Now, there is some of these players that have elected not to play, and that's fine. But these guys got to get back to work. They want to make a check.
Steve, I'm someone that believes golf should have been playing like a month ago. There's a lot in a lot of states. They never shut down golf courses. I think golf is the one sport that should have tried to keep going before any of the other sports. You agree with that?
Absolutely. And I think the PGA Tour is going to be about 80% perception of what we got to do to make it look like we're doing everything we need to do, and about 20% reality. I think you're right. I think we can all get apart and play golf, and it's not going to be that big a deal. They're still playing mini tour events out in Scottsdale. There's people playing golf all over the place, and it's quite easy to stay apart playing golf.
All right, before we let you go, tell us about the SG Tour app.
Mate, since I left the tour, my app is all about the fan experience. And what people like about SG Tour is gaming. And we've built a bunch of golf games. In fact, us three could be on a golf game together. We can pick out how much money we want to play, and we can even pick out the purse and how we want to break it down. But what people really like is the trash talking in the text message. So I can tell you how bad a pick you made this week, Marcellus, or not. And we have a lot of tour players that add to our app, so we have exclusive content. But it's all about the fan. I mean, the golf's never had an app that you could actually interact with the tour and watch the golf and compete with your buddies in a little gambling match.
Steve, thank you so much. So glad to have you. Did a great job. Looking forward to the match, the Champions Challenge between Tiger Woods, Phil Mickelson, Peyton Manning, and Tom Brady. That's this weekend. All right, just around the corner, TJ Houshmandzadeh is going to join us.
Thanks, guys.
The NFL is talking about a proposal, 4th and 15. to replace the onside kick. We'll tell you whether we like it or not. Speak for yourself from the crib, presented by Hyundai. More after this. Welcome back to Speak for Yourself from the crib. Jason Whitlock, Marcellus Wiley. Time to roll out to TJ Houshmandzadeh's crib. Keep the conversation going about the NFL and a new proposal that the NFL is considering. Replacing the onside kick with putting the offense out on the field for a fourth and 15 try. If they convert, you get the ball back. TJ, what do you think of this idea?
For me, I love it. It's going to bring a lot of excitement to it. If you think about the onside kick, it was really anticlimactic. And you need an onside kick to win a game or just to get in contention to win the game. The game, in essence, is over. There's a lot of variables. What happens, and I haven't seen this, I would assume it's going to count, but what happens when you score a touchdown? Does that count as a touchdown, or do you just get the 15 yards and things of that nature? A defense, it will illegal contact be an automatic first down. So there's some things that they probably need to clean up, but as far as pure excitement for football, I like it.
I love it for the entertainment value because I got tired of seeing backup tight ends run down kamikaze style and not even come up with the damn football. But in terms of the integrity of the game, I'm not a fan of it. I'm not a fan of rewarding a team potentially that is a losing team in competition. And this would occur with this situation. Compared to onside kick success, fourth and 15 success doubles it, sometimes even more so. So you're basically saying, hey, losing team, here's a little turbo boost. We need you back in this game. And I'm not a fan of that. I understand that losing teams can get rewarded. It's called draft pick selection. You get the best pick when you're the worst team. But in the game, four quarters during competition, I am not rewarding the losers. And this would.
Yeah, I think this is a stupid idea, and I've got an idea that I think would enhance the end of games for teams that are trying to play catch-up. It's very simple to me. In the final 2 minutes of the game, an offense has to move the ball forward 1 yard or the clock stops. If you don't gain a yard, the clock stops. That gives a defense a chance, regardless of how many timeouts they have. You can actually stop the clock and get your offense back out on the field. It stops people from, because what I hate is the three kneeling down deal. I didn't pay to that. I want to see guys, I wanted to continue them, have to continue to play and try to move the ball forward. That's the object of the game. And to me, that's better. The onside kick, they've ruined it with all the safety rules. I don't even know why they changed it or whatever. Because I've never seen anybody get hurt on an onside kick. They've ruined the onside kick. Last two minutes of each half. Offense has to move the ball forward at least 1 yard. I'm not talking about a half yard, a full yard, or the clock stops like it's an incomplete pass. That, to me, would make the end of games more exciting. TJ, quick comment, then Marcellus wrap us up.
I actually like your rule. That's your insight. That's pretty good. But I look at it from this. You want best on best. You want Mahomes with the ball going against Baltimore's defense. You got best on best. When you put it to an onside kick, the highest paid players, they off the field right now. And so that's why I like this rule, because you got big on big, good on good, your best versus the best.
I don't like any rule that helps somebody getting their ass kicked to try and get it kicked a little less. And all these rules sound like it. Look, you taking the L, take the L. And nothing better in football than a kneel down. Oh, you still want to play hard? Not me. We got this. Oh, it's the most defeating moment in life. I pay for seeing kneel down. So far, no good rules yet.
All right, Uncle Jimmy's just around the corner. We'll get his approval rating or his thoughts on Dak Prescott. And we'll wrap up a week of Speak for Yourself from the Crib presented by Hyundai. More after this. Welcome back to Speak for Yourself from the Crib. Jason Whitlock, Marcellus Wiley. Let's roll out to Uncle Jimmy's crib. Get his thoughts on Dakre Fitzgerald Prescott. Uncle Jimmy, what you got?
What's wrong?
Hey, man, what the hell you got? What the hell is wrong with you, man? Hey, man, you are overdoing it with this whole weight loss thing, man. Talking about, I done lost 30, 40 pounds. Man, you done lost about 12 damn pounds. You down from a triple 10 to a double 10. You talking about I'm eating one meal a day. Hot damn it, you can feed a small tribe in Somalia for 1 year with that one meal. I remember a time when you sat up there and lost weight, people in the neighborhood would worry about you. They say, what the hell's wrong with him? What's happening? Look like he got that package. Hell, the only person I'd have never known to gain weight that had that package was Magic. And hot damn it, I ain't seen you throw no ass. I ain't seen you pull no rabbit out your ass. What the hell's wrong with you?
Oh,
you ain't getting nearly as good as what the hell you think.
Why not just congratulate him, you know?
Thank you, man. Congratulations.
Why not
keep it going, Jason. You look great.
Hey,
one of them does. Good. One of them looks great.
All right, we'll see you on Monday.
Hey,
we're out of here.
Boy, you're looking lean over there.